and had been handed down in her family since the breaking. She used compulsion so often like a hammer that one might forget that she could wield the weaker forms of it with great delicacy, twisting a mind's path so subtly that even the closest examination might miss every trace of her. In fact, she might have been the best at that who ever lived. He let the gateway vanish, but held on to Sidene. Those tricks did not work on someone wrapped in the source. And in truth, he enjoyed the struggle for survival, though it was unconscious now. Only the strongest deserved to survive, and he proved his own fitness to himself every day in that battle. There was no way she could know he still grasped Sidene, but she smiled briefly into her goblet as if she did. He liked people pretending to know things almost as little as he liked them knowing things he did not. "What do you have to tell me?" he said, more roughly than he intended.
"About Luz Theron? You never seem interested in anything else. Now he would be a pet. I would make him the centerpiece of every display. Not that he is handsome enough normally, but who he is makes up for that."
Smiling into her goblet again, she added in a murmur that would have been inaudible without Sidene in him,
"And I do like them tall."
It was an effort not to stand up as straight as he could. He was not short, but it rankled that his height did not match his ability. Luz Theron had been a head taller than he, so was Althor. There was always an assumption that the taller man was the better. It took another effort not to touch the scar that slanted across his face from hairline to square-cut beard. Luz Theron had given him that. He kept it for a reminder. He suspected she had misunderstood his question on purpose to bait him. "Luz Theron is long dead," he said harshly. "Randall Thor is a jumped-up farm boy, a choss-hauler, who has been lucky." Grendel blinked at him as if surprised.
"Do you really think so?"
"There has been more than luck behind him. Luck could not have carried him so far, so fast." Samael had not come to talk about Althor, yet ice formed at the base of his spine. Thoughts he had forced himself to dismiss came oozing back. Althor was not Luz Theron, but Althor was Luz Theron's soul reborn, as Luz Theron himself had been the rebirth of that soul. Samael was neither philosopher nor theologian, yet Ishamael had been both, and he claimed to have divined secrets hidden in that fact. Ishamael had died mad, true, but even when he was still sane, back when it seemed they surely would drive Luz Theron Telamon to defeat, he claimed this struggle had gone on since the creation, an endless war between the Great Lord and the Creator, using human surrogates. More, he avowed that the Great Lord would almost as soon have turned Luz Theron to the shadow as have broken free. Maybe Ishamael had been a little mad then, too, but there had been efforts to turn Luz Theron. And Ishamael said that it had happened in the past. The Creator's champion made a creature of the shadow and raised up as the shadow's champion. There were unsettling implications in those claims, ramifications Samael did not want to consider. But the thing that shoved itself to the front of his mind was the possibility that the Great Lord might really want to make Althor nameless. It could not happen in a vacuum. Althor would need help. Help. That could explain his supposed luck so far. "Have you learned where Althor is hiding Asmodian? Or anything of Lanfear's whereabouts? Or Mogedion's?" Of course Mogedion always hid herself. The spider was forever popping up just when you were sure she was finally dead.
"You know as much as I do," Grendel said blithely,
pausing for a sip from her goblet.
"Myself? I think Luz Theron killed them. Oh, don't grimace at me. Althor, since you insist."
The thought did not seem to disturb her, but then she would never find herself in open conflict with Althor. That had never been her way. If Althor ever discovered her, she would simply abandon everything and reestablish herself elsewhere, or else surrender before he could strike a blow, then begin convincing him that she was indispensable.
"There are rumors out of Kyrian about Lanfear dying at Luz Theron's hands the same day he killed Ravin."
Rumors. Lanfear has been aiding Althor since the beginning, if you ask me. I would have had his head in the Stone of Tyr, except that someone sent Murdral and Trollocs to save him. That was Lanfear, I'm certain. I'm done with her. The next time I see her, I'll kill her. And why would he kill Asmodian? I would if I could find him, but he has gone over to Althor. He's teaching him!
Always some excuse for your failures, she whispered into her punch, again too softly for him to have heard without Sidene. In a louder voice, she said, Choose your own explanations, if you wish. You may even be right. All I know is that Luce Theron seems to be removing us from the game one by one.
Samael's hand trembled with anger, nearly slopping punch from his goblet before he could still it. Randall Thor was not Luce Theron. He himself had outlived the great Luce Theron Telamon, handing out praise for victories he could not have won himself, and expecting others to lap it up. His only regret was that the man had not left a grave for him to spit on. Waving ringed fingers in time to a snatch of music from below, Grendel spoke absently, as though her real attention was on the tune.
So many of us have died confronting him, Agenor and Bathomel, Ishamael, Belal and Ravin, and Lanfear and Asmodian, whatever you believe. Possibly Mogedion. She might be creeping about in the shadows, waiting until the rest of us have fallen. She's foolish enough. I do hope you have somewhere prepared to run. There doesn't seem to be any doubt that he is going after you next. Soon, I would say. I'll face no armies here, but Luce Theron is gathering quite a large one to hurl against you. The price you pay if you must be seen to wield power as well as wield it.
He did have lines of retreat prepared, as it happened. That was only prudent. But hearing in her voice the certainty of his need infuriated him. And if I destroy Althor, then, it will violate none of the great lord's command. He did not understand, but there was no requirement to understand the great lord, only to obey. As far as you've told it to me, if you have held back... Grendel's eyes hardened to blue ice. She might avoid confrontation, but she did not like threats. The next instant she was all inane smiles again, as changeable as the weather in Midgen.
What Demandred told me that the Great Lord told him, I have passed on to Samael. Every word. I doubt even he would dare lie in the Great Lord's name.
But you've told me little enough of what he plans to do, Samael said softly. Him, or Semirag, or Messana. Practically nothing.
I have told you what I know.
She sighed irritably. Perhaps she was telling the truth. She seemed to regret not knowing herself. Perhaps. With her, anything and everything could be show.
For the rest, think back, Samael. We used to plot against one another almost as hard as we fought Luce Theron. Yet we were winning before he caught us all gathered at Shael Ghul.
She shuddered, and for a moment her face looked haggard. Samael did not want to remember that day either, or what came after, a dreamless sleep while the world changed past recognition, and all he had wrought vanished.
Now we have awakened in a world where we should stand so far above ordinary mortals as to be another species. And we are dying. For a moment forget who will be nameless. Althor, if you must call him by that name, Althor was as helpless as a babe when we woke.
Ishamael did not find him so, he said. Of course Ishamael had been mad then, but she continued as if he had not spoken.
We behave as if this is the world we knew, where nothing is what we knew. We die one by one, and Althor grows stronger. Lands and people gather behind him, and we die. Immortality is mine. I do not want to die.
If he frightens you, then kill him. Before the words were well out of his mouth, he would have swallowed them if he could. Disbelief and scorn twisted Grendel's face.
I serve the great lord and obey, Samael.
As do I, as well as any.
So good of you to deign to kneel to our master.
Her voice was as wintry as her smile, and his face darkened.
All I say is that Luz Theron is as dangerous now as he ever was in our own time. Frightened? Yes, I am frightened. I intend to live forever, not meet Ravin's fate.
Tsag!
The obscenity at least made her blink and truly look at him.
Althor! Althor Grendel! An ignorant boy, whatever Asmodean manages to teach him. A primitive lout, who probably still believes that 9/10 of what you and I take for granted is impossible. Althor makes a few lords bow and thinks he has conquered a nation. He hasn't the will to close his fist and truly conquer them. Only the Aiel, Bajadrovja. Who would have thought they could change so?
He had to get a grip on himself. He never cursed like this. It was a weakness.
Only they truly follow him, and not all of them. He hangs by a thread, and he will fall one way or another.
Will he? What if he is...
She stopped, raising her goblet so rapidly that punch spilled onto her wrist and gulped until the goblet was almost empty. The elegant serving woman came scurrying with the crystal pitcher. Grendel thrust out the goblet to be refilled and went on breathlessly.
How many of us will die before it is done? We must stand together, as we never have before.
That was not what she had started to say. He ignored the ice that gripped his spine once more.
Althor would not be chosen nameless.
He would not!
So she wanted them to stand together, did she?
Then link with me. The pair of us linked will be more than a match for Althor. Let that be the beginning of our new standing together.
His scar tightened as he smiled at the sudden blankness on her face. The link had to come from her, but with only the two of them, she would have to give him control and trust him to choose when to end it.
So, it seems we will go on as before.
There had never been any question of it, really. Trust was no part of any of them.
What more do you have to tell me?
That was the reason he had come here, not to listen to her rattle on about Randall Thor. Althor would be dealt with, directly or indirectly. She stared at him, gathering herself, eyes glittering with enmity. Finally she said,
"Little enough."
She would not forget that he had seen her lose control. None of her anger came out in her voice. Her tone was smooth, even offhand.
Semirag missed the last gathering. I don't know why. And I do not think Messana or Demandra does either. Messana in particular was annoyed, though she tried to hide it. She thinks Luz Theron soon will be in our hands, but then she has said the same every time. She was sure Balal would kill or capture him in Tyr. She was very proud of that trap. Demandred warns you to be careful.
So Demandred knows you and I meet, he said flatly.
Why had he ever expected to receive more than driblets from her?
Of course he does. Not how much I tell you, but that I tell you something. I am trying to bring us together, Samael, before it is too...
He cut in sharply.
You deliver a message to Demandred from me. Tell him I know what he is up to.
Events to the south had Demandred's mark all over them. Demandred had always liked using proxies.
Tell him to be careful. I won't have him or his friends interfering in my plans.
Perhaps he could direct Althor's attention there. That would likely put an end to him. If other means did not work.
So long as they steer clear of me, his lackeys can carve out what he wants. But they will steer clear, or he will answer for it.
There had been a long struggle after the boar was opened into the great lord's prison. Many years before, enough strength was gathered to move openly. This time, when the final seal was shattered, he would present the great lord with nations ready to follow. If they did not know who they followed, what did that matter? He would not fail, as Belial and Ravin had. The great lord would see who served him best.
You tell him!
If you wish it, she said, grimacing reluctantly. An instant later, that lazy smile came onto her face again. Changeable.
All these threats weary me. Come, listen to the music and calm yourself.
He started to tell her he had no interest in music, as she knew very well, but she turned to the marble railing.
There they are. Listen.
The very dark man and woman had come to the foot of the dais with their peculiar harps. Samael supposed the chimes added something to their playing. What, he could not say. They beamed reverently up at Grendel when they saw her watching. Despite her own advice to listen, Grendel went on talking.
A peculiar place they come from. Women who can channel are required to marry the sons of women who can channel, and every one of those bloodlines is marked with tattoos on their faces at birth. No one with the markings is allowed to marry anyone without. Any child of such a union is killed. Tattooed males are killed in their 21st year in any case, and cloistered before, ignorant even of how to read.
So she had come back to it after all. She truly must think he was simple. He decided to plant a small barb of his own. Do they bind themselves like criminals? A look of puzzlement flashed across her face and was hastily suppressed. Plainly she had not reasoned it out. There was no reason she should. Few people in their time had ever committed one violent crime, let alone more. Before the boar, at least. She did not admit her ignorance, of course. There were times when it was best to hide lack of knowledge, but Grendel often carried the practice to a fault. That was why he had mentioned it. He knew it would dig at her, and serve her right for the useless shreds she doled out.
No,
she said, as if she had understood. The Aeod, as they call themselves, live in their own small towns, avoiding everyone else, and supposedly never channel without permission or orders from the Shabote or Shaboan. In fact, they are the real power, and the reason the Shabote and Shaboan only rule 7 years. Rich laughter bubbled up in her for a moment. She herself had always believed in being the power behind the power.
Yes, a fascinating land. Too far from the center to be of any use for many years, of course.
She made a slight dismissive gesture, fluttering beringed fingers.
There will be plenty of time to see what can be made of it after the day of return.
Yes, she definitely wanted him to think she had some interest there. If she really had, she never would have mentioned the place. He set his untouched goblet on the tray the muscular fellow had ready before his hand finished moving. Grendel did train her servants well.
I am sure their music is fascinating,
if you cared for that sort of thing. But I have preparations to see to. Grendel laid a hand on his arm.
Careful preparations, I trust. The great lord will not be pleased if you disturb his plans.
Samael's mouth tightened.
I have done everything short of surrendering to convince Althor I am no threat to him, but the man seems obsessed with me.
You could abandon Ilion, start again elsewhere.
No!
He had never run from Luz Theron, and he would not run from this provincial buffoon. The great lord could not mean to put one like that above the chosen. Above him.
You have told me all of the great lord's command.
I dislike repeating myself, Samael.
Her voice held a touch of exasperation, her eyes a hint of anger.
If you did not believe me the first time, you will not now.
He stared at her a moment longer, then nodded brusquely. Very probably she had told the truth there. A lie touching the great lord could rebound with deadly force.
I see no reason to meet again until you have something to tell me besides whether Semirag was there or not.
His brief frown at the harpists should be enough to convince her she had succeeded in her misdirection. He turned his gaze into a disapproving sweep across the people splashing in the pools, the acrobats, and the rest, so it would not seem obvious. All this wasted effort, all this display of flesh, really did disgust him. "Next time you can come to Ilion." She shrugged, as though it did not matter, but her lips moved slightly, and his cyadine-enhanced hearing plucked, "If you are still there," from the air. Icily, Samael opened a gateway back to Ilion. The muscular young man failed to move quickly enough. He did not have time to scream before he was sliced in two down the middle, him and the tray and the crystal pitcher. The edge of a gateway made a razor seem blunt. Grendel pursed her lips peevishly at the loss of one of her pets.
"If you want to help us stay alive," Samael told her, "find out how Demondred and the others mean to carry out the Great Lord's instructions."
He stepped through the gateway, never taking his eyes from her face.
Grendel maintained her vexed expression until the gateway closed behind Samael, then allowed herself to tap her fingernails on the marble railing. With his golden hair, Samael might have been handsome enough to stand among her pets, if he would let Semirag remove the burned furrow that slanted across his face. She was the only one remaining with the skill to do what would once have been a simple matter. It was an idle thought. The real question was whether her effort had paid off. Xiaofan and Chiape played their strange atonal music, full of complex harmonies and odd dissonances, quite beautifully. Their faces shone with joy that they might be pleasing her. She nodded, and could almost feel their delight. They were much happier now than they would have been left to themselves. So much effort to procure them, and solely for this few minutes with Samael. Of course, she could have taken less trouble. Anyone at all from their lands would have done as well, but she had her standards, even when preparing a momentary subterfuge. Long ago she had chosen to seek every pleasure, to deny herself none that did not threaten her standing with the Great Lord. Her eyes fell on the offal staining her carpet, and her nose twitched irritably. The weaving might be salvaged, but it annoyed her that she would have to remove the blood herself. She gave quick orders, and Osana ran to oversee having the carpet removed, and Rashan's remains disposed of. Samael was a transparent fool. No, not a fool. He was deadly enough when he had something to fight directly, something he could see clearly, but he might as well be blind when it came to subtleties. Very likely he believed her ruse was intended to mask what she and the others were up to. One thing he would never consider was that she knew every twitch of his mind, every twist of his thoughts. After all, she had spent nearly 400 years studying the workings of minds far more convoluted than his. Transparent he was. However much he tried to hide it, he was frantic. He was trapped in a box of his own devising, a box he would defend to the death rather than abandon, a box in which he very probably would die. She sipped her wine and her forehead furrowed slightly. Possibly she had already achieved her end with him, though she had expected it to take 4 or 5 visits. She would have to find reason to call on him in Ilion. It was best to observe the patient, even after it appeared the desired path had been taken. Whether the boy was a simple farm lad or Luz Theron himself truly come back, she could not make up her mind on that. He had proven himself far too dangerous. She served the Great Lord of the Dark, but she did not mean to die, not even for the Great Lord. She would live forever. Of course one did not go against even the slightest of the Great Lord's wishes unless one wished to spend an eternity dying, and another eternity wishing for the lesser agony of that long death. Still, Randall Thor had to be removed, but it would be Samael who earned the blame. If he realized that he had been aimed at Randall Thor like a doornat, set to hunt, she would be very much surprised. No, not a man to recognize subtleties. Far from stupid, though. It would be interesting to discover how he had found out about the binding. She herself would never have learned had Messana not made a rare slip while venting her anger on an absent Semirag. Her fury had been strong enough that she did not realize how much she had revealed. How long had Messana been tucked away inside the White Tower? The mere fact that she was opened interesting avenues. If there were some way to discover where Demondred and Semirag had placed themselves, it might be possible to work out what they intended to do. They had not trusted her with that. Oh, no. Those three had worked together since before the War of Power, on the surface at least. She was sure they had plotted against one another as assiduously as any of the Chosen, but whether Messana undercut Semirag or Semirag Demondred, she had never yet found a crack between them into which a wedge could be driven. A scuff of boots announced an arrival, but not men to replace the carpet and remove Rashan. Ibram was a tall, well-made young Damani in tight red breeches and a flowing white shirt. He could have fit into her collection of pets if he had been more than a merchant's son. His eyes were intent on her as he knelt, dark and shining. "The Lord Iturralde has come, great mistress." Grendel set the goblet atop a table that at first glance seemed to be inlaid with ivory dancers. "Then he shall speak with the Lady Basine." Ibram rose smoothly and offered an arm for the frail Domani woman he now saw. He knew who lay behind the weaving of illusion, but even so the reverence on his face faded slightly. She knew it was Grendel, not Basine, whom he worshipped. At the moment she did not care. Samael was at the very least pointed at Randall Thor and perhaps launched. As for Demondred and Semirag and Messana, only she herself knew that she had made her own journey to Shael Ghul and down to the Lake of Fire. Only she knew that the great lord had all but promised to name her Nablus, a promise sure to be fulfilled with Althor out of the way. She would be the most obedient of the great lord's servants. She would sow chaos till the harvest made Demondred's lungs explode. Semirag let the iron-bound door close behind her. One of the glow bulbs, salvaged from the great lord alone knew where, flickered fitfully, but they still gave better light than the candles and oil lamps she had to accept in this time. Aside from the light, the place had the intimidating look of a prison, rough stone walls and a bare floor with a small crude wooden table in one corner. Not her notion. She would have had it all spotless white and gleaming Quaeron, sleek and sterile. This place had been prepared before she knew the need. A pale-haired, silk-clad woman hung spread-eagled from nothing in the middle of the room, glaring at her defiantly. An Aes Sedai. Semirag hated Aes Sedai. "Who are you?" the patient demanded. "A dark friend? A black sister?" Ignoring the noise, Semirag quickly checked the buffer between the woman and Saidar. If it failed, she could mask the wretch again with no trouble. It was a measure of the woman's weakness that she could afford to leave the knotted buffer unwatched. But taking care was second nature to her, taking each step in its exact turn. Now for the woman's clothing. Someone in garments felt safer than someone without. Delicately she wielded fire and wind, slicing away dress and shift and every scrap right down to the patient's shoes. Drawing everything out in front of the woman in one compressed bundle, she channeled again fire and earth, and fine dust rained down onto the stone floor. The woman's blue eyes bulged. Semirag doubted she could duplicate those simple feats, even if she had been able to follow them. "Who are you?" This time there was an edge to the demand. Fear, perhaps. It was always good if that began early. Precisely, Semirag located the centers in the woman's brain that received messages of pain from the body, and just as meticulously began to stimulate them with spirit and fire. Only a little at first, building slowly. Too much at once could kill in moments, yet it was remarkable how far the system could be taken if fed in finely increasing increments. Working on something you could not see was a difficult task, even this close, but she was as knowledgeable about the human body as anyone had ever been. The spread-eagled patient shook her head as if she could shake off the pain, then realized she could not, and fixed Semirag with a stare. Semirag merely watched and maintained the net. Even in something as hurried as this must be, she could afford a little patience. How she did hate any who called themselves Aes Sedai. She had been one herself, a true Aes Sedai, not an ignorant fool like the simpleton hanging before her. She had been known, famed, whisked to every corner of the world for her ability to mend any injury, to bring people back from the brink when everyone else said there was nothing more to be done. And a delegation from the Hall of the Servants had offered her a choice that was no choice, to be bound never to know her pleasures again, and with that binding be able to see the end of life approach, or else to be severed and cast out as Aes Sedai. They had expected her to accept binding. That was the rational, proper thing to do, and they were rational, proper men and women. They never expected her to flee. She had been one of the first to go to Shael Ghul. Fat beads of sweat popped out on the patient's pale face. Her jaw knotted, and her nostrils flared as she sucked in air. Now and then she gave a small grunt. Patience. Soon now. It had been jealousy. The jealousy of those who could not do what she could. Had anyone she pulled back from death's grasp ever said they would rather have died than suffer the little extra she exacted? And the others? There were always those who deserved to suffer. What mattered that she enjoyed giving them their deserts? The hall and its hypocritical whining about legalities and rights. She had deserved the right to do as she did. She had earned the right. She had been more valuable to the world than all those together who entertained her with their screams. And in jealousy and spite, the hall had tried to pull her down. Well, some of them had fallen into her hands during the war. Given time, she could break the strongest man, the proudest woman, mold them exactly as she wanted them to be. The process might be slower than compulsion, but it was infinitely more enjoyable, and she did not think even Grendel could undo what she did. Compulsion could be unraveled, but her patience. On their knees, they had begged to give their souls to the Shadow, and had served obediently until they died. Each time Demondred had been full of what a coup it was, another counselor of the hall publicly proclaiming allegiance to the great lord. But for her, the best part had been the way their faces went pale, even years later, when they saw her, the way they hurried to assure her that they remained faithful to what she had made of them. The first sob ripped out of the woman hanging in the air and was stifled. Semirag waited impassively. Haste might be necessary here, but too much haste could spoil everything. More sobbing erupted, overwhelming the patient's efforts to subdue it, growing louder, louder, until it swelled to a howl. Semirag waited. The woman shone with a greasy slick of sweat, her head flung from side to side, flailing her hair, and she jerked helplessly in her unseen tethers, convulsive flutters. Full-throated, ear-shattering shrieks lasted until breath was exhausted and began again as soon as lungs could be filled. Those wide, bulging blue eyes saw nothing. They seemed to be glazing. Now it began. Semirag cut off her streams of Sidar abruptly, but minutes passed before the screams subsided into panting. "What is your name?" she asked gently. The question did not matter as long as it was one the woman would answer. It could have been, "Do you still defy me?" It was often pleasant to keep on with that one until they pleaded to prove they no longer did. But she needed to make every question count this time. Involuntary shudders ran through the hanging woman. Giving Semirag a wary, slitted gaze, she licked her lips, coughed, and finally muttered hoarsely, "Cabriana McCandes." Semirag smiled. "It is good to tell me the truth." There were pain centers in the brain and pleasure centers. She stimulated one of the latter, just for a few moments, but hard as she moved closer. The jolt widened Cabriana's eyes as far as they would go. She gasped and shook. Plucking a handkerchief from her sleeve, Semirag lifted the woman's wondering face and tenderly dabbed away sweat. "I know this is very hard on you, Cabriana," she said warmly. "You must try not to make it more difficult." With a soft touch, she smoothed damp hair away from the woman's face. "Would you like something to drink?" Not waiting for an answer, she channeled. A battered metal flask floated from the small table in the corner to her hand. The Aes Sedai never took her eyes from Semirag, but she drank thirstily. After a few swallows, Semirag took the flask away and returned it to the table. Yes, that's better, isn't it? Remember, try not to make it difficult for yourself. As she turned away, the woman spoke again in a rasping voice. I spit in the milk of your mother, dark friend. Do you hear me? Semirag stopped listening. Any other time, there would have been a spreading glow of pleasure that the patient's defiance had not been crushed yet. The purest exhilaration came from shaving away defiance and dignity in minute slices, watching the patient finally realize that they were going and struggle vainly to cling to what remained. No time for that now. Carefully, she once more set the web on the pain centers of Cabriana's brain and knotted it. Normally, she liked to be in personal control, but some haste was necessary. Triggering the net, she channeled to extinguish the lights and left, closing the door behind her. Darkness would work its part, too, alone, in the dark, with the pain. Despite herself, Semirag made a vexed sound. There was no finesse in this. She did not like having to hurry, and to be called away from her charge. The girl was willful and obdurate, the circumstances difficult. The corridor came close to matching the chamber for bleakness, a broad, shadowy shaft through stone, with crossing passageways that she had no desire to explore, nearly lost in the murk. Only two other doors were in sight, one leading to her present quarters. They were comfortable enough rooms if she had to be here, but she made no move toward them. Shaidar Haran stood in front of that door, black-clad and wreathed in dimness like smoke, so still that it was almost a shock when it spoke, a sound of bone dust being ground. What have you learned? The summons to Shael Ghul had resulted in a warning from the Great Lord. When you obey Shaidar Haran, you obey me. When you disobey Shaidar Haran... However much the warning nettled, there had been no need for more. Her name, Cabriana Mekandis. I could hardly learn more so quickly. It flowed across the hallway in that eye-wrenching way, ebon cloak hanging in denial of motion. One moment it was a statue 10 paces away, the next it loomed over her so she had the choice of backing away or craning her neck to look up at that dead-white, eyeless face. Backing away was out of the question. You will drain her completely, Semirag. You will squeeze her dry without delay and tell me every scrap that you learn. I promised the Great Lord that I would, she told it coldly. Bloodless lips twisted in a smile. That was its only reply. Turning sharply, it strode away through patches of shadow and abruptly was gone. Semirag wished she knew how Myrdral did that. It had nothing to do with the power, but on the edges of shadow where light was becoming dark, a Myrdral could suddenly be elsewhere, in another shadow far away. Long ago, Aginor had tested over 100 of them to destruction in a vain effort to learn how it was done. The Myrdral themselves did not know. She herself had proved that. Abruptly, she realized that her hands were pressed hard against her stomach, which seemed a ball of ice. It had been many years since she had felt fear anywhere except facing the Great Lord in the Pit of Doom. The frozen lump began to melt as she moved to the other prison door. Later she would analyze the emotion dispassionately. Shaidar Haran might be different from any other Myrdral she'd ever seen, but it was still a Myrdral. Her second patient, hanging like the first in mid-air, was a blocky, square-faced man in a green coat and breeches suitable for fading into a forest. A full half of the glow bulbs here shimmered on the edge of failure. That any had survived so long was a miracle, but Cabriana's warder was unimportant, really. What was needed, for whatever purpose, rested in the Aes Sedai's mind. Yet the Myrdral apparently had been told to capture an Aes Sedai, and in their minds, for some reason, Aes Sedai and warders seemed inseparable. As well they had, though. She had not before had an opportunity to break one of these storied fighters. His dark eyes tried to bore holes through her head as she removed his clothing and boots, and destroyed them as she had Cabriana's. He was hairy, a mass of large, hard muscles and scars. He never flinched. He said nothing. His defiance was different from the woman's. Hers was bold, flung in your face. His, a quiet refusal to bend. He might be harder to crack than his mistress. Normally he would have been much the more interesting. Pausing, Semirag studied him. There was something, a tightness around the mouth and eyes, as if he already fought pain. Of course. That peculiar bond between Aes Sedai and Warder. Strange that these primitives should have come up with something that none of the Chosen understood, yet it was so. From the little she knew, this fellow quite possibly felt at least some of what the other patient was undergoing. Another time, that would present interesting possibilities. Now it only meant that he thought he knew what he was facing. "Your owner does not take very good care of you," she said. "If she was more than a savage, there would be no need for you to be marred with all those scars." His expression changed only slightly, to a tinge of contempt. "So." This time she set the net on the pleasure centers and began the slowly increasing stimulation. He was intelligent. He frowned, shook his head, then his eyes narrowed, fixed on her like chips of dark ice. He knew he should not be feeling that rising bliss, and though he could not see her net, he knew it had to be her work, so he set himself to fight it. Semirag almost smiled. No doubt he thought pleasure easier to fight than pain. On rare occasions she had broken patience with no more than this. It gave her little enjoyment, and afterward they could not think coherently, simply wanting more of the ecstasy that bloomed in their heads. But it was quick, and they would do absolutely anything for more. That lack of coherence was why she had not used it on the other patient. She needed answers there. This fellow would learn the difference soon enough. Difference. She put a finger to her lips in thought. Why was Shaidar Haran different from every other Murdral? She did not like discovering an oddity just when everything seemed to be going in their favor, and a Murdral set above the Chosen, even occasionally, was more than a mere oddity. Althor was blinded, his attention all on Samael, and Grendal was letting Samael know enough to keep him from ruining everything with his pride. Of course, Grendal and Samael were certainly scheming for advantage, together or separately. Samael was a hot sofar, with warped steering planes, and Grendal not much easier to predict. They had never learned that power came only from the Great Lord, handed out as he chose for his own reasons, at his whims. She could think that in the safety of her head. More troubling were the Chosen who had vanished. Demondred insisted they must be dead, but she and Messana were not so sure. Lanfear. If there was any justice, time would give her Lanfear. The woman was always there when least expected, always behaving as if she had the right to dabble her fingers in others' plans, always flitting to safety if her dabbling brought ruin. Mogedion. She skulked out of sight, but she had never gone so long before without making herself known, just to remind the rest of them that she, too, was chosen. Asmodian. A traitor, and so doomed, but he really had vanished, and Shaidar Haran's existence and her own orders here combined to remind her that the Great Lord worked in his own ways toward his own goals. The Chosen were no more than pieces on the board. They might be counselors and spires, but they were still pieces. If the Great Lord moved her here secretly, might he not be moving Mogedion or Lanfear or even Asmodian? Might Shaidar Haran not be sent to deliver covert commands to Grendal or Samael, or, for that matter, to Demondred or Messana? Their uneasy alliance, if it could be called by so strong a name, had lasted a long time, but neither would tell her if they received secret orders from the Great Lord, any more than she would ever let them learn of the orders that had brought her here, or those that had had her send Murdral and Trollocs to the Stone of Tyr to battle those sent by Samael. If the Great Lord meant to make Althor nameless, she herself would kneel to him and wait for a slip to deliver him into her hands. Immortality meant infinite time to wait. There would always be other patients to amuse her in the meantime. What troubled her was Shaidar Haran. She had never been more than an indifferent Charon player, but Shaidar Haran was a new piece on the board, one of unknown strength and purpose. And one daring way to capture your opponent's high counselor and turn it to your side was to sacrifice your spires in a false attack. She would kneel, if need be, for as long as need be, but she would not be sacrificed. An odd feel to the net pulled her out of her thoughts. She took one look at the patient and clicked her tongue in exasperation. His head hung to one side, chin dark with blood where he had chewed his tongue, eyes staring and already filmed over. Inattention, and she had let the stimulation grow too fast, too far. With an irritation that never touched her face, she stopped channeling. There was no point trying to stimulate the brain of a corpse. A sudden thought occurred to her. If the warder could feel what the Aes Sedai felt, was the reverse true? Eyeing the scars that decorated the man's body, she was sure it was impossible. Even these simple fools would have altered the bond if it meant sharing the feel of that. Still, she abandoned the cadaver and stepped across the corridor with some haste. Screams heard before she opened the iron-bound door onto darkness brought a deep breath of relief. Killing the woman before draining her of everything she knew would probably have meant remaining here until another Aes Sedai was captured, at the least. There were barely intelligible words among the throat-shredding howls, words that seemed to have all the force of the patient's soul behind them. "Please! Oh, light! Please!" Semirag smiled faintly. There was a little fun in this, after all. Chapter 7. A Matter of Thought. Seated on her mattress, Elaine finished the 100 strokes with her left hand, then put the hairbrush away in her small leather traveling case and pushed it back under the narrow bed. A dull ache rested behind her eyes from a day spent channeling, making Terangreal, too often trying to make Terangreal. Nynaeve, balanced atop their loose-jointed stool, had long since completed brushing her waist-length hair and was nearly done replaiting her braid loosely for sleep. Sweat made her face glisten. Even with the one window open, the small room was stifling. The moon hung fat in a star-filled black sky. Their stub of candle provided a fitful glow. Candles and oil lamp were in short supply in Salidar. No one got more than a scrap of light at night unless they had to work with pen and ink. The room truly was cramped, with little space to move around the two short beds. Most of what they owned was packed away in a pair of battered brass-bound chests. Accepted's dresses and cloaks they certainly had no need of now hung from pegs in the walls, where ragged holes in the crazed yellowing plaster showed the lathing beneath. A tiny table with a tilt was shoved between the beds, and a rickety washstand in the corner held a white pitcher and basin with an amazing number of chips between them. Even Accepted, who had their heads patted at every turn, were not indulged. A handful of bedraggled blue and white wildflowers, fooled by the weather into blooming late and not very well, stuck out of a yellow vase with a broken neck between a pair of brown pottery cups on the table. The only other spot of color was a green-striped song sparrow in a wicker cage. Elaine was nursing it for a broken wing. She had tried her small skill with healing on another bird, but songbirds at least were too small to survive the shock. No complaining, she told herself firmly. Aes Sedai lived a little better, novices and servants a little worse, and Gareth Bryn's soldiers slept on the ground most often. "What can't be changed must be endured," Linny used to say that all the time. Well, Salidar held small enough comfort, and no luxury, and no coolness either. Pulling her shift away from her body, she blew down her front. "We want to be there ahead of them, Nynaeve. You know how they go on if they have to wait." Not a breath of breeze stirred, and the parched air seemed to pull perspiration from every pore. There must be something that could be done about the weather. Of course, if there was, Seafolk Windfinders would probably already have done it, but she still might think of something, If only the Aes Sedai would give her time enough away from Turangrial. As accepted, she supposedly could take her studies where she wanted, but if they thought I could eat and show them how to make Turangrial at the same time, I wouldn't have a minute to myself. At least there would be a break in that tomorrow. Shifting to her bed, Nynaeve frowned and fiddled with the Eidam bracelet on her wrist. She always insisted one of them wear it, even when they slept, though it produced decidedly odd and unpleasant dreams. There was hardly need. The Eidam would hold Mogedion just as well hanging on a peg, and on top of that, she shared a truly tiny cubbyhole with Birgitta. Birgitta was as good a guard as could be, and besides, Mogedion almost wept any time Birgitta so much as frowned. She had the least reason to want Mogedion alive, the most to want her dead, which the woman knew very well. Tonight the bracelet would be less use than usual. "Nynaeve, they'll be waiting!" Nynaeve sniffed loudly. She did not do well being at anyone's beck and call, but she took one of two flattened stone rings from the table between the beds. Both too large for a finger, one was striped and flecked blue and brown, the other blue and red, and each was twisted, so it had only one edge. Unfastening the leather thong hanging around her neck, Nynaeve threaded the blue and brown ring alongside another, heavy and gold, Lan's signet. She touched the thick gold band tenderly before tucking both inside her shift. Elaine picked up the blue and red ring, frowning at it. The rings were Turangrial she had made in imitation of one now in Suan's possession, and despite their simple appearance, they were complex beyond belief. Sleeping with one next to your skin would take you into Tel Iran Riod, the world of dreams, a reflection of the real world, perhaps of all worlds. Some Aes Sedai claimed that there were many worlds, as if all variations of the pattern had to exist, and that all those worlds together made up a still larger pattern. The important thing was that Tel Iran Riod reflected this world, and had properties that were extremely useful, especially since the tower knew nothing of entering it, so far as they could discover. Neither of these rings worked quite as well as the original, though they did work. Elaine was getting a little better at that. Of four attempts to produce a copy, only one had been a failure. A much better average than with the things she made from scratch. But what if one of her failures did worse than simply not work, or not work very well? Aes Sedai had been stilled studying Turangrial. Burned out, it was called, when it happened by accident. Yet it was just as final. Nynaeve did not think so, of course, but Nynaeve would not be satisfied till she healed somebody 3 days dead. Elaine turned the ring in her fingers. What it did was simple enough to understand, but the how still escaped her. How and why were the keys? With the rings, she thought the pattern of colors had as much to do with it as the shape. Anything other than the twisted ring did nothing, and the one that had turned out solid blue just gave you horrific nightmares. But she was not sure how to reproduce the original's red, blue, and brown. Yet the fine structure of her copies was the same, the way the tiniest bits of them, too small to see or even detect without the one power, were arranged. Why should the colors matter? There seemed to be one common thread in those tiny structures for Turangrial that required channeling to work, and another for those that simply made use of the power. Stumbling on that was what allowed her to even attempt to make original Turangrial. But there was so much she did not know, so much she was guessing at. "Are you going to sit there all night?" Nynaeve asked dryly, and Elaine gave a start. Setting one of the pottery cups back on the table, Nynaeve arranged herself on her bed, hands folded across her middle. "You were the one who mentioned not keeping them waiting. For myself, I don't mean to give those biddies an excuse to chew my tail feathers." Hastily, Elaine slipped the speckled ring. It was not really stone anymore, though it had started out that way, onto a cord that she tied around her own neck. The second pottery cup also held a tincture of herbs that Nynaeve had prepared, slightly sweetened with honey to negate a bitter taste. Elaine drank about half, from past experience, enough to help her sleep even with a headache. Tonight was one of those nights she could not afford to dally. Stretching out on the cramped bed, she channeled briefly to extinguish the candle, then flapped her shift to produce a little cool. Well, a stir in the air, anyway. I wish Egwene would get better. I am tired of the scraps Shiriam and the rest of them toss us. I want to know what is happening. She had touched on a hazardous topic, she realized. Egwene had been injured a month and a half ago in Cairhien, on the day Moiraine and Lanfear died, the day Lan vanished. The wise ones say she is getting better, Nynaeve murmured sleepily in the dark. For once she did not sound as if she had followed the path to Lan. That's what Shiriam and her little circle say, and they have no reason to lie, even if they could. Well, I wish I could look over Shiriam's shoulder tomorrow night. As well wish... Nynaeve stopped for a yawn. As well wish the hall will choose you, Amarlin, while you're about it. You might have that one granted. By the time they choose anyone, we'll both be grey-haired enough for the job. Elaine opened her mouth to reply, but with the other woman's example, it turned into a yawn, too. Nynaeve began to snore, not loudly, but with dogged persistence. Elaine let her eyes drift shut, but her thoughts tried to remain focused in spite of herself. The hall certainly was being dilatory, the sitters meeting for less than an hour some days, and often not at all. To talk to one, you would think she saw no urgency, though, of course, the sitters for the six Ajahs, there were no Reds in Salidar, of course, did not tell other Aes Sedai what they discussed in session, much less an accepted. They certainly had cause for dispatch. If their intentions remained secret, their gathering surely no longer did. Elida and the Tower would not ignore them forever. Beyond that, the White Cloaks were still only a few miles away in Amadicia, and rumors had begun of Dragonsworn right here in Altara. The Light alone knew what Dragonsworn might get up to if Rand had no control over them. The Prophet was a good example, or rather a horrid one. Riots, homes and farms burned, people murdered for not showing enough fervor in support of the Dragon Reborn. Nynaeve's snoring sounded like cloth ripping, but in the distance. Another yawn cracked Elaine's jaws. She turned on her side and snuggled into the thin pillow. Reasons for dispatch. Samael sat in Ilion, and it was only a few hundred miles to the Ilianer border, far too close with one of the Forsaken. The Light alone knew where the other Forsaken were, or what they were scheming. And Rand. They had to be concerned about Rand. He was not a danger, of course. He could never be that. But he was the key to everything. The world truly did bend itself around him now. She would bond him somehow. Min. She and the embassy had to be more than halfway to Camelund by now. No snows to slow them. Another month yet for them to arrive. Not that she was concerned about Min going to Rand. What was the girl thinking of? Min. Sleep slid over her, and she slid in to Telairan Riod, and found herself standing in the main street of silent, night-shrouded Salidar, with the moon gibbous overhead. She could see quite clearly, more so than moonlight alone would have allowed. There was always a sense of light in the world of dreams, from everywhere and nowhere, as if the darkness itself had some dark glow. But then dreams were like that, and this was a dream, if not any ordinary dream. The village here reflected the real Salidar, but in strange facsimile, more still than even night would make it. Every window was dark, and an air of emptiness hung heavily, as if no one occupied any of the buildings. Of course, no one did, here. A nightbird's reedy cry was answered by another, then a third, and something made a faint rustling noise as it skittered away in the odd half-light. But the stables would be empty, and the picket lines outside the village, and the clearings where sheep and cattle had been gathered. Wild creatures there would be in plenty, but none domesticated. Details changed between one glance and the next. The thatch-roofed buildings remained the same, yet a water barrel would be in a slightly different place, or gone. A door that had stood open was closed. The more ephemeral a thing was in the real world, the more its position or condition might change, the less firm its reflection. Occasionally motion flickered in the dark street, someone appearing and vanishing after a few steps, or even floating across the ground as if flying. Many people's dreams could touch Telairan Riod, but only briefly, which was lucky for them. Another property of the world of dreams was that what happened to you here was still real when you woke. If you died here, you did not wake. A strange reflection. Only the heat was the same. Nynaeve stood there in an accepted white dress with the banded hem, impatient beside Swan and Lyanna. She had the silver bracelet, too. Though it would not work from here to the waking world, it still held Mogedion, but Nynaeve, out of her body, would not be feeling anything through it. Lyanna was regally slim, though in Elaine's opinion her barely opaque Damani gown of thin silk detracted from her elegance. The color kept shifting, too. That sort of thing happened until you learned what you were doing here. Swan was better. She wore a simple dress of blue silk, with a scooped neck just low enough to show the twisted ring on a necklace. On the other hand, lace trim sometimes appeared on the dress, and the necklace changed from a plain silver chain to elaborate pieces with rubies or fire drops or emeralds set in gold, with earrings to match, then back to the plain chain. That was the original ring hanging around Swan's neck. She appeared as solid as any of the buildings. To herself, Elaine looked just as solid, but she knew that to the others she seemed slightly misty, like Nynaeve and Lyanna. You almost thought you might see the moonlight through them. That was what using a copy did. She could sense the true source, but as she was, Saidar felt tenuous. If she tried to channel, that would be meager too. With the ring Swan wore, it would not be so, but that was the price of having secrets someone else knew and you did not dare have exposed. Swan trusted the original more than Elaine's copies, so she wore it, or sometimes Lyanna did, while Elaine and Nynaeve, who could use Saidar, made do. "Where are they?" Swan demanded. Her neckline swooped up and down. The dress was green now, the necklace a strand of fat moonstones. "It's bad enough they want to stick an oar into my work and row as they please. Now they make me wait." "I do not know why it upsets you for them to come along," Lyanna told her. "You like watching them make mistakes. They do not know half of what they think they do." For a moment her gown slid dangerously close to transparency. A close torque of fat pearls appeared around her neck and vanished. She did not notice. She had even less experience here than Swan. "I need some real sleep," Swan muttered. "Bryn tries to run me breathless, but I have to wait on the pleasure of women who'll spend half the night remembering how to walk, not to mention being lumbered with these two." She frowned at Elaine and Nynaeve, then rolled her eyes skyward. Nynaeve gripped her braid firmly, a sure indication of temper working. For once, Elaine agreed with her wholeheartedly. It was more than difficult being a teacher with pupils who thought they knew more than they did, and were far more likely to call down the teacher than the teacher was to get away with calling them down. Of course, the others were far worse than Swan or Lyanna. Where were the others? Movement appeared up the street. Six women surrounded by the glow of Saidar, who did not vanish. As usual, Shiriam and the rest of her council had dreamed themselves into their own bedchambers and walked out. Elaine was not sure how far they understood the attributes of Telairun Riod yet. In any case, they often insisted on doing things their own way, even when there was a better. Who could know better than an Aes Sedai? The six Aes Sedai truly were beginners in Telairun Riod, and their dresses changed every time Elaine looked at them. First, one was wearing the embroidered Aes Sedai shawl fringed in the color of her Aja, and with the white flame of Tar Valon a bold teardrop on the back. Then four were, then none. Sometimes it was a light traveling cloak, as to keep dust off, with the flame on back and left breast. Their ageless faces showed no signs of the heat, of course. Aes Sedai never did. And no sign they were aware of how their clothes were changing, either. They were as misty as Nynaeve or Lyanna. Shiriam and the others put more faith in dream Tarangreal that required channeling than in the rings. They just did not seem willing to believe that Telairun Riod had nothing to do with the One Power. At least Elaine could not tell which were using her copies. Somewhere about them, three would have a small disk of what had once been iron, scribed on both sides with a tight spiral and powered by a flow of spirit. the only one of the five powers that could be channeled in your sleep. Except here, anyway. The other three would be carrying small plaques, once amber, with a sleeping woman worked inside each. Even if she had all six Tarangreal in front of her, Elaine would not have been able to pick out the two originals. Those copies had gone very well. Just the same, it was still copying. As the Aes Sedai came down the dirt street together, she heard the tail end of their conversation, though she could not make head nor foot of it. "We'll scorn our choice, Carlinia," fiery-haired Shiriam was saying. "But they will scorn any choice we make. We might as well stay by our decision. You do not need me to list reasons again." Morvryn, a stout brown sister with gray-streaked hair, snorted. "After all our work with the Hall, we would have a hard time changing their minds now." "As long as no ruler scoffs, why should we care?" Mirella said heatedly. The youngest of the six, not many years Aes Sedai, she sounded decidedly irritated. "What ruler would dare?" Anaya asked, much like a woman asking what child would dare track mud on her carpets. "In any case, no king or queen knows enough of what passes among Aes Sedai to understand. Only the sisters' opinions need concern us, not theirs." "What worries me," Carlinia replied coolly, "is that if she is easily guided by us, she may be as easily guided by others." The pale, almost black-eyed white was always cool, some would say icy. Whatever they were talking about, it was nothing they wanted to discuss in front of Elaine or the others. They fell silent just before reaching them. Swan and Liana's reaction to the newcomers had been to turn their backs on each other sharply, as if they had been having words interrupted by the Aes Sedai's arrival. For Elaine's part, she quickly checked her dress. It was the proper banded white. She did not know how she felt about that, appearing in the right dress without thought. She would have wagered that Nynaeve had had to change her garb after appearing. But then Nynaeve was far more intrepid than she, struggling against limits that she herself acquiesced to. How could she ever manage to rule Andor? If her mother was dead. If. Shiriam, slightly plump and with high cheekbones, turned tilted green eyes on Swan and Liana. For a moment she wore a blue-fringed shawl. "If you two cannot learn to get along, I vow I'll send both of you to Tiana." It had the sound of something said often and no longer really meant.
"You worked together long enough," Baonin said in her heavy Taraboner accent. A pretty gray with honey-colored hair and a multitude of braids, she had blue-gray eyes that constantly looked startled. Nothing surprised Baonin, though. She would not believe the sun came up in the morning until she saw for herself. Yet if one morning it did not, Elaine doubted that Baonin would turn a hair. It would just confirm that she'd been right to demand proof. "You can and must work together again." Baonin sounded as if she had said that so often that she hardly thought of it. All the Aes Sedai were long since used to Swan and Liana. They had begun handling them as they might have managed two girls who could not stop squabbling. Aes Sedai did have a tendency to see anyone who was not as a child, even these two, who once had been sisters.
"Send them to Tiana or don't," Mirella snapped. "But don't talk about it." Elaine did not think the darkly beautiful woman was angry at Swan or Liana, perhaps not at anyone or anything in particular. She had a volatile temper, remarkable even among greens. Her golden-yellow silk dress became high-necked, but with an oval cutout that exposed the tops of her breasts. She wore a peculiar necklace, too, like a wide silver collar supporting three small daggers, hilts nestling in her cleavage. A fourth dagger appeared and was gone so quickly it might have been imagination. She eyed Nynaeve up and down as if searching for fault.
"Are we going to the tower, or aren't we? If we are going to do this, we might as well accomplish something useful while we are about it."
Elaine knew why Mirella was angry now. When she and Nynaeve first came to Salidar, they had been meeting Egwene in Telairun Riod every 7 days to share what they had learned, which had not always been easy, since Egwene was always accompanied by at least one of the Aiel dreamwalkers she was studying with. Meeting without a wise one or two had taken some pains. In any case, all that ended when they reached Salidar. These six-eyed Sedai of Shiriam's council had taken over the meetings, when they had had only the three original Turangrial and little more knowledge of Telairan Riad than how to reach it. That had been just when Egwene was injured, which left Aes Sedai facing wise ones, two sets of proud, resolute women, each suspicious of what the other wanted, neither willing to yield an inch or bow her neck a hair. Of course, Elaine did not know what went on at those meetings, but she had her own experiences to go by, and fragments dropped here and there by Shiriam and the others. Aes Sedai were sure they could learn anything once they knew there was something to be learned, usually required the respect due a queen, and always expected to be told what they wanted to know without delays or quibbles. They had apparently demanded answers about everything, from what Rand was planning to when Egwene would be well enough to return to the world of dreams, to whether it was possible to spy on people's dreams in Telairan Riad, or to enter the world of dreams physically, or bring someone into the dream against their will. They had even asked more than once whether it was possible to affect the real world by what you did in the dream, a pure impossibility they apparently doubted. Morvryn had read a little about Telairan Riad, enough to come up with plenty of questions, though Elaine suspected Swan supplied her share. She thought Swan was angling to attend the meetings herself, but the Aes Sedai seemed to think it concession enough to allow her to use the ring as an aid in her work with the eyes and ears. Aes Sedai interference in that work was what upset her. As for the Aiel, wise ones, the dreamwalkers at least, Elaine was aware from her own encounters, not only knew just about everything there was to know about the world of dreams, but looked on it almost as a private preserve. They did not like anyone coming there in ignorance, and had a rough way of dealing with what they saw as foolishness. Besides which, they were a close-mouthed lot, apparently fiercely loyal to Rand, unwilling to say much more than that he was alive, or that Egwene would return to Telairan Riad when she was well enough, and more than unwilling to answer questions they considered improper. Which last could mean that they did not believe the questioner knew enough yet to hear the answer, or that question or answer or both somehow violated their strange philosophy of honor and obligation. Elaine knew little more of Jieto than that it existed, and that it made for very peculiar, very touchy behavior. All in all, it was a recipe for disaster, and Elaine thought it very probably was served up fresh every 7 days, at least from the Aes Sedai point of view. Shiriam and the other five had required lessons every night in the beginning, but now there were only 2 times they did so. The night before meeting the wise ones, as if to hone their skills one last time before a contest, and the night after, usually tight-mouthed, as if to work out what had gone wrong and how to counter it. Mirella was probably already seething over tomorrow night's disaster. There surely would be one of some kind. Morvryn turned to Mirella and opened her mouth, but suddenly there was another woman among them. It took Elaine a moment to recognize Gera, one of the cooks, in those ageless features. Wearing a green-fringed shawl with the flame of Tar Valon on her back, and weighing no more than half what she really did, Gera raised an admonitory finger to the Aes Sedai, and was gone. "So those are her dreams, are they?" Carlinia said coolly. Her snow-white silk dress grew sleeves that hung in points over her hands, and a high, tight neck under her chin. Someone should speak to her. "Leave over, Carlinia," Anaya chuckled. "Gera's a good cook. Let her have her dreams. I can see the attraction myself." Abruptly she became slimmer and taller. Her features did not really alter. She wore the same plain, motherly face as always. With a laugh she changed back. "Can't you see the fun in something for once, Carlinia?" Even Carlinia's sniff was cool. "Clearly," Morvryn said, "Gera saw us, but will she remember?" Her dark, steely eyes were thoughtful. Her dress, plain dark wool, held the steadiest among the six. Details shifted, but so subtly that Elaine could not really say what was different. "Of course she will," Nynaeve said acerbically. She had explained this before. Six Aes Sedai looked at her, eyebrows rising, and she moderated her voice. A little. She hated scrubbing pots, too. "If she remembers the dream, she will. but only as a dream. Morvryn frowned. She ran Bayonin a close second in wanting proof. Nynaeve's long-suffering expression was going to get her in trouble, whatever her tone. Before Elaine could say anything to take the Aes Sedai's attention from Nynaeve, though, Lyanna spoke up with an expression close to a simper. "Don't you think we should go now?" Swan snorted contemptuously at the timidity, and Lyanna cut her eyes at her sharply. "Yes, you'll want to have as much time in the tower as possible," Swan said, diffident in turn, and Lyanna sniffed. They really did it very well. Shiriam and the others never suspected that Swan and Lyanna were not simply two stilled women clinging to a purpose that might keep them alive, clinging to the edge of what they had been. Two women childishly at one another's throats all the time. The Aes Sedai should have remembered that Swan had had the reputation of a strong-willed and devious manipulator, and to a lesser extent so had Lyanna. Had they presented a unified front or shown their true faces, the six would have remembered and looked hard at everything the pair said. But divided, spitting rancor in each other's face, all but groveling to the Aes Sedai and plainly not even aware of it, when one was reluctantly forced to agree with what the other said, it lent extra weight. When one objected on obviously frivolous grounds, so did that. Elaine knew they used the pretense to guide Shiriam and the others towards supporting Rand. She just wished she knew what else they used it for. "They're right," Nynaeve said firmly, giving Swan and Lyanna a disgusted look. Their pretense irked Nynaeve no end. Nynaeve would not have groveled for her life. "You should know by now that the longer you spend here, the less real rest you get. Sleep while you are in Tel Iron Riad doesn't do as much good as ordinary sleep. Now remember that if you see anything out of the ordinary, you need to be careful." She truly did hate repeating herself. The fact showed clearly in her voice. But with these women, Elaine had to admit it was too often necessary. If only Nynaeve did not sound as if she were talking to dim-witted children. "When somebody dreams themselves into Tel Iron Riad like Gera, but they're having a nightmare, sometimes the nightmare survives, and those are very dangerous. Avoid anything that looks unusual, and try to control your thoughts this time. What you think of here can become real. That Murdral that popped out of nowhere last time might have been a leftover nightmare, but I think one of you let her mind wander. You were talking about the Black Adja, if you'll remember, and discussing whether they were letting Shadow Spawn into the tower." As if that were not bad enough, she had to add, "You won't impress the wise ones tomorrow night if you drop a Murdral into the middle of everything." Elaine winced. "Child," Anaya said gently, adjusting the blue-fringed shawl that was suddenly looped over her arms. "You have been doing very good work, but that doesn't excuse a peevish mouth." "You have been given a number of privileges," Mirella said, not at all gently. "But you seem to forget that they are privileges." Her frown should have been enough to make Nynaeve quake. Mirella had been increasingly hard on Nynaeve the past weeks. She had her shawl on, too. They all did. A bad sign. Morvryn snorted bluntly. "When I was accepted, any girl who spoke to an Aes Sedai that way would have spent the next month scrubbing floors if she was due to be raised Aes Sedai the next day." Elaine spoke up hurriedly, hoping she could forestall their own disaster. Nynaeve had put on what she probably thought was a conciliatory face, but she looked sulky and stubborn. "I'm sure she didn't mean anything, Aes Sedai. We have been working very hard. Please forgive us." Adding herself might help, since she had done nothing. It might also have them both scrubbing floors. At least it made Nynaeve look at her. And think, apparently, since her features smoothed into something that did seem appeasing and she made a curtsy and stared at the ground as though abashed. Maybe she really was. Maybe. Elaine rushed on as if Nynaeve had made a formal apology and had it accepted. "I know you all do want to spend as much time as possible at the tower, so perhaps we shouldn't wait any longer? If you will all visualize Elida's study, just as you saw it last time?" Elida was never called the Amyrlin in Salidar, and in the same way the Amyrlin's study in the White Tower had its name shifted. "Everyone fix it in your minds so we all arrive together." Anaya was the first to nod, but even Carlinia and Bayonin let themselves be diverted.
It was unclear whether the ten of them moved or Teleiran Riod moved around them. It could have been either, from the little Elaine really understood. The world of dreams was almost infinitely malleable. One moment they were standing in the street in Salidar, the next in a large and ornate room. The Aes Sedai gave satisfied nods, still inexperienced enough to be pleased at anything that worked as they thought it should. As surely as Teleiran Riod reflected the waking world, this room reflected the power of the women who had occupied it over the last 3,000 years. The gilded stand lamps were unlit, but there was light in the odd way of Teleiran Riod and dreams. The tall fireplace was golden marble from Kandor, the floor polished redstone from the mountains of mist. The walls had been paneled a relatively short time ago, a mere 1,000 years, in pale wood, oddly striped and carved with marvelous beasts and birds that Elaine was sure had come straight out of the carver's imagination. Gleaming pearly stone framed tall arched windows that led onto the balcony overlooking the Ammerlin's private garden. That stone had been salvaged from a nameless city submerged in the Sea of Storms during the breaking of the world, and no one had ever found its like elsewhere. Each woman who used that room put her own mark on it, if only for the time of her possession, and Elida was no different. A heavy throne-like chair, an ivory flame of Tarvalin cresting the high back, stood behind a massive writing table, ornately carved in triple-linked rings. The tabletop was bare except for three boxes of Altaran lacquer work, each precisely the same distance from the next. A plain white vase stood atop a severe white plinth against one wall. The vase held roses, the number and color changing at every look, but always arranged with a harsh rigidity. Roses, at this time of year, in this weather. The one power had been wasted to make them grow. Elida had done the same when she was advisor to Elaine's mother. Above the fireplace hung a painting in the new style on stretched canvas, of two men fighting among clouds, hurling lightning. One man had a face of fire, and the other was Rand. Elaine had been at Falma. The painting was not too far from the truth. A tear in the canvas across Rand's face, as though something heavy had been thrown at it, had been mended almost invisibly. Plainly, Elida wanted a constant reminder of the Dragon Reborn, and just as plainly, she was not happy having to look at it. "If you will excuse me," Lyanna said before all the satisfied nodding was done, "I must see if my people have received my messages." Every Aja except the White had a network of eyes and ears scattered across the nations, and so did a good many individual Aes Sedai, but Lyanna was rare, perhaps unique, in that as keeper she had created a net in Tarvalin itself. No sooner had she spoken than she vanished. "She should not be wandering about alone here," Shiriam said in an exasperated voice. "Nynaeve, go after her. Stay with her." Nynaeve gave her braid a tug. "I don't think very often you do not," Mirella cut her off. "For once, do as you are told when you are told, accepted." Exchanging wry glances with Elaine, Nynaeve nodded, visibly suppressing a sigh, and disappeared. Elaine had little sympathy. Had Nynaeve not indulged her irritation back in Salidar, it might have been possible to explain that Lyanna could be anywhere in the city, that it would be almost impossible to find her, and that she had been venturing into Teleiran Riod alone for weeks. "Now to see what we can learn," Morvern said, but before anyone could move, Elida was behind the writing table, glaring. An unyielding, stern-faced woman, handsome rather than beautiful, and dark of hair and eye, Elida wore a blood-red dress, with the striped stole of the Ammerlin seat about her shoulders. "As I have foretold," she intoned, "the White Tower will be reunited under me." "Under me!" She pointed harshly to the floor. "Kneel and ask forgiveness of your sins." With that, she was gone. Elaine let out a long breath and was gratified to realize she was not the only one. "A foretelling?" Bayonin's voice creased thoughtfully. She did not sound worried, but she might well have. Elida did have the foretelling, if fitfully. When the foretelling laid hold of a woman and she knew a thing would happen, it did. "A dream," Elaine said, and was surprised at how steady her voice was. "She's asleep and dreaming. No wonder if she dreams everything to her liking. Please, Light, let it only be that. Did you notice the stole? Anaya asked no one in particular. It had no blue stripe. The Amarlin's stole was supposed to have one stripe for each of the 7 Ajahs. A dream, Shiryam said flatly. She sounded unafraid, but she had her blue-fringed shawl on again and was clutching it around her. So was Anaya. Whether it is or not, Morvryn said placidly, we may as well do what we came for. Not much could frighten Morvryn. The abrupt stir of activity at the Brown Sisters' words made it suddenly clear how still everyone had gone. She, Carlinia, and Anaya glided swiftly out to the anteroom where the Keeper's work table would be. That was Alviarin Fryden under Elida, a white, strangely, though the Keeper always came from the Amarlin's own Aja. Swan stared after them testily. She claimed there was often more to be learned from Alviarin's papers than from Elida's, for Alviarin sometimes seemed to know more than the woman she supposedly served, and twice Swan had found evidence that Alviarin had countermanded Elida's orders, apparently without repercussions. Not that she had told Elaine or Nynaeve what orders. There were definite limits to Swan's sharing. Shiryam, Beonin, and Mirella gathered at Elida's desk, opened one of the lacquered boxes, and began rifling through the papers inside. Elida kept her recent correspondence and reports there. The box, worked in golden hawks fighting among white clouds in a blue sky, would suddenly shut again every time one of them let go of the lid, until they remembered to hold it open, and the papers themselves changed even as they were being read. Paper truly was ephemeral. Amid vexed tisks and annoyed sighs, the Aes Sedai persevered. "Here's a report from Danella," Mirella said, hastily scanning a page. Swan tried to join them. Danella, a young brown, had been part of the cabal that deposed her, but Beonin gave her a sharp frown that sent her back to a corner, grumbling to herself. Beonin had returned her attention to the box and its documents before Swan had taken 3 steps. The other 2 women never noticed. Mirella went right on talking. She says that Matin Stepanaeus accepts wholeheartedly. Roadron is still trying to take every side, while Aleandra and Tylin want more time to consider their answers. There's a note here in Elida's hand. Press them! She clicked her tongue as the report melted into air in her hand. It did not say about what, but there can be only 2 possibilities to take in those 4. Matin Stepanaeus was king of Ilion, and Roadron of Mirundi, while Aleandra was queen of Gildan and Tylin of Altara. The subject had to be Rand, or the Aes Sedai opposing Elida. "At least we know our emissaries still have as good a chance as Elida's," Shiryam said. Of course, Salidar had sent none to Matin Stepanaeus. Lord Brend of the Council of 9, Samael, was the true power in Ilion. Elaine would have given a pretty penny to know what Elida proposed that Samael was willing to support, or at least let Matin Stepanaeus say that he would support. She was sure the 3 Aes Sedai would have given as much, but they just went on snatching documents out of the lacquerwork box. "The arrest warrant for Moiraine, it is still in force," Beonin said, shaking her head as the sheet in her hand suddenly turned to a fat sheaf. "She does not yet know Moiraine is dead." Grimacing at the pages, she let them fall. They scattered like leaves and melted into air before settling. "Elida still means to build herself a palace, too." "She would," Shiryam said dryly. Her hand jerked as she took in what appeared to be a short note. "Shemarin has run away. The accepted Shemarin." All 3 glanced at Elaine before turning back to the box, which they had to open again. None made any comment on what Shiryam had said. Elaine very nearly ground her teeth. She and Nynaeve had told them Elida was reducing Shemarin, a yellow sister, to the accepted, but of course they had not believed. An Aes Sedai could be made to do penance, she might be cast out, but she could not be demoted short of stilling. Only it seemed that Elida was doing exactly that, whatever Tower Law said. Maybe she was rewriting Tower Law. A number of things they had told these women had not really been believed. Such young women, accepted, could not know enough of the world to know what could be and what not. Young women were credulous, gullible. They might well see and believe what was not there at all. It was an effort not to stamp her foot. An accepted took what Aes Sedai wished to hand out and did not ask for what Aes Sedai did not choose to give, such as apologies. She kept her face smooth and her smoldering inside. Swan felt under no such restraints. Most of the time she did not. When the Aes Sedai were not looking at her, she bathed them all in a glower. Of course, if one of the three glanced in her direction, her face became meek acceptance in a twinkling. She was very practiced at that. A lion survives by being a lion, she had once told Elaine, and a mouse by being a mouse. Even so, Swan made a poor and